I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Many lawmakers, especially Republicans, such as Speaker Johnson, say that this was long overdue. And Claudine Gay's sudden departure now makes her the shortest serving president in Harvard's history.
6 months into her tenure, Harvard University President Claudine Gay announced her resignation in a letter writing, "It is in the best interest of the school so it can navigate this moment of extraordinary challenge."
This is difficult work.
Gay's resignation comes nearly a month after she and the president of the University of Pennsylvania and MIT faced widespread condemnation following this testimony at a House education hearing on anti-Semitism on college campuses.
The answer is yes, that calling for the genocide of Jews violates Harvard Code of Conduct, correct?
Again, it depends on the context.
Doesn't depend upon the context. It never depended on the context. And again, she was reading a prepared statement written by lawyers. As Alan Dershowitz mentioned in the preceding hour, if you missed the first hour, it's always an engaging hour. Every hour is, but I encourage you to go back and listen to it. Pull it up. You go to LarryConnorsUSA.com, LarryConnorsUSA.com, and you can find everything we put up on the air for you and the streaming videos that we also air. When we're on the air live here with you, we're from 6 to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. When we're on the air broadcasting, those videos are streaming at Larry Connors USA Facebook, Twitter, Rumble, News Talk STL, Facebook, Twitter, Rumble. But Dershowitz had said she was just simply reading what was presented to her. Didn't really show any heart, not speaking from the heart. But wasn't that the first thing she claimed after she got pillared, after that really weak appearance in front of Congress, especially Stefanik, asking, "Is from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," and other such slurs and slanders, are they not calling for the genocide, and does that violate your student body handbook? It depends upon the context. These are supposedly learned people. These are supposedly people that are smarter than you and me. Well, smarter than me. I'm sure you're smarter than them, but and come to think of it, maybe I'm smarter than them as well. And now Congress says, you know, we need to take a look at this because we do send federal dollars to these poison Ivy League schools and other schools in higher learning and lower learning. Yeah, it's time we reevaluate. And part of that is the DEI issue. Keep in mind, Claudine Gay got her job because she fit the box. She was a black woman to be the first black woman president of Harvard. Well, she made history. She was also the shortest length of term for a president of Harvard, 6 months and a few days. And I'm sure when she got the notice, Congress would like you to speak before us about these things, and she was probably thinking, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, I get to shine in the lights of Capitol Hill. And now she's evading them the best she can. Thank you for joining us. Here we are, the second hour of Larry Connors USA, here for you every Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. And again, as I said, when we're on the air, we're also streaming video. Video where you can watch me kind of pull my hair out. Oh, you're right, there's not much more to pull out, but I'm working on it. You never know. I may get one of these. What do they call those things, Quentin, where they pour the water in it and it sprouts up hair or grass or whatever? Maybe, don't laugh at me. I'm trying to do something to improve myself. He's sitting over there laughing at me. I'm making note of that. I'm going to go to our DEI Human Sources Department when we finish. We'll have a little discussion about this. So there was Colleen Gay making that stupid statement. And now members of Congress say, we really need to take a look at all this. Well, there was another person in the congressional hearing watching this. This would be, I believe he was identified as Jonathan Freedom. I think I got the name right. But he was a Harvard law student, and he's sitting there watching the president of his law school, actually of his university, make an arse of herself.
There's a lot of people and a lot of Jewish students who view this as a good thing, as a victory, as a step in the right direction. And then there's a lot of us that are also asking, but what next?
Gay was the university's first black president. She was criticized by many in the Jewish community for her response to anti-Semitism on campus after the Hamas attacks in Israel. She faced more scrutiny from some donors and conservative activists following allegations of plagiarism in her dissertation and several articles, which she denied. She wrote, "It has been distressing to have doubt cast on my commitments to confronting hate and to upholding scholarly rigor, and frightening to be subjected to personal attacks and threats fueled by racial animus."
Racial animus. Had to pull out the race card. Had to pull out the race card. Saying, I'm being victimized because I'm black. Forgetting the reason she got the job is because she was black. John LeBoutier, I have on often, obviously. And I know some of you don't like him, but then again, it's not that you don't like him, you don't agree with him. That's fine. You don't have to agree with everyone I have on board. You don't have to agree with me. Everybody is entitled to an opinion. You all have one, you're entitled to it. And I can't tell you your opinion is wrong because it's your opinion. But John LeBoutier was at Harvard. And after being there, he later wrote a book titled Harvard Hates America. You can't find it in print now. It's gone out of print. John and I were talking about that the other day. He now has the rights to it because the publisher can only hold the rights for so many years, and they didn't finish printing. He's thinking, or I'm encouraging him. I said, John, you need to put a new forward on it, new material, and put the damn book out again because it is a book written 40-plus years ago, as timely today as it was then, maybe more so. John later became a member of Congress, went in under Reagan, and will tell you clearly he's a never Trumper, and that's what really burns a lot of you, and I know that, but he's also a good guy. And let me take a moment to add that. Just because you disagree with someone politically, even if it has to do with Donald Trump, they don't have to be an enemy. And you don't have to fight and feud about that all the time. Have your little sparring matches and so forth, but also look for the things that bind us. And what I see with John is a patriot. And to me, if you're a patriot, a lot of other sins that you are responsible for, not me, you, can be forgiven. I told you before, I've got a relative. I'll be direct about it, a sister. And a brother has told me, you can't talk to her about Trump. She'll just go ballistic. I said, well, then don't talk to her about Trump. Talk about grandkids or something else. You don't have to always put your hand on the stove. Find something else to discuss. So you heard the student saying, we thought this would help, but what's going to happen next? Well, Alan Dershowitz, who is a professor emeritus of law at Harvard, has some remarks.
It means that she lost the confidence of some members of the board. I had heard that at least two or three members of the board were beginning to suggest to her that she ought to resign. The board had originally come behind her 100%. Even our good friend Larry Summers supported her 100%. Mm. Most of my colleagues on the law school faculty supported her 100%. But those were their public statements. In their heart, I don't think they supported her.
Don't think they supported her. And probably they didn't. And it's one thing to say a public statement that I support her, but behind closed doors, thumbs down. And it wasn't just her testimony. It was what Christopher Rufo of the Manhattan Project later found out about all the plagiarism she was involved with. Dershowitz said the plagiarism is probably what really sunk the boat.
I like her as a person. I've met her a couple of times. She's very nice. I think she probably would be a decent teacher. So my personal hope is that she is allowed to remain on, but it has to be dependent on the degree of the plagiarism. Look, for me, the thing that put me over the top is that she plagiarized her acknowledgments. I mean, this is a woman who can't even write from the heart. There was a spoof that was going around today arguing that she plagiarized her resignation statement. I don't think that's true, but she doesn't sound like the kind of person who is creative or has the self-confidence to write things. Even her testimony in front of Congress was scripted for her by a bunch of lawyers. It didn't come from the heart. And that's what I haven't seen. Anything that shows me that she is a person of the kind of high moral character that is required to be the president of Harvard.
Which you would expect a high moral character, would you not? So the fact that she couldn't conduct herself properly in front of Congress, had to rely on statements written by others, whether or not they were plagiarized, and then also all the plagiarism copies and stories that have come out. I mean, more came out Monday than what we had last week. So we have several factors in play regarding Claudine Gay, regarding the ex-Harvard president. But Dershowitz nails a prime issue.
She represents this diversity, equity, and inclusion bureaucracy that is destroying universities all over the country. This thing called intersectionality, which divides the world into oppressed and oppressors. We're the oppressors because we're white and we're successful and we made it on meritocracy, and the oppressed are everybody else. And that's what students are learning these days. And so the corporation made a terrible mistake by appointing her in the beginning. She was appointed as a diversity equity, and now she's blaming everybody but herself. She's blaming racists. I'm not a racist. I was against her on the merits because she didn't deserve to be president, and she didn't do a good job in her 6 months as president. That's called meritocracy, and that's what universities are turning against today, meritocracy. They're against grades. They're against any evaluations. They want people to be judged by the color of their skin, not the content of their character, to paraphrase Martin Luther King. I hope this marks the end of DEI, but I'm not sure it does.
No, I don't think it is either. And I think it was simply moving to a consolation prize. But DEI is hitting not only the universities and schools below them, and teachers and professors who leave and then go to teach in lower classes or other colleges. They carry all that baggage with them. It's into the corporate boards and major corporations as well. It's into our military. It's into our government. We've got two or three members that their greatest claim in government is that they are the first transgender or the first gay or lesbian to hold this position. Point one, KJP, White House spokeswoman. Point two, Pete Buttigieg, Director of Transportation, doesn't know a damn thing about transportation except how to take a vacation via transportation when there's a major train wreck in Ohio. And no, Biden is still not showing up. And then, of course, you've got the Admiral, given that title, the Admiral of Health and Human Services. So we basically have the universities versus the corporation. But what we really need to deal with here is how are we going to actually begin to get rid of some of this? Well, in Gay's case, there are some stipulations.
We need to get new boards and new corporations because the corporations are part of the problem. They represent the trendiest approaches. They're supposed to represent the long-term standards of scholarship, objectivity. What we need is a return to meritocracy, a return to hard grading, a return to real values where people are rewarded based on their hard work and their accomplishments, not the color of their skin or their gender. That's what we've moved away from, and that's what I hope. This is a watershed event, and Harvard will pick as the president the most qualified Albert Einstein on its faculty and send a message that we reward hard work and we reward scholarship, and we don't play favorites and use these DEI criteria for judging people academically.
And we don't.
This is a watershed.
And we don't. If I can just add a bit. And we don't, we of Harvard, and we don't condone anti-Semitism of any kind. That has to be part of it, Professor Dershowitz. You, of all people, know that.
It was so easy for her to answer that question if she had it in her heart.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She was reading from a script, and she thought she could get away with it.
That was Larry Kudlow throwing that question to Dershowitz in the process. So even if we get DEI and we start doing meritocracy again, there's still something else that Claudine Gay has in her hand.
I hope there'll be a full investigation by an objective, neutral group of scholars who have no dog in the fight, not anybody who defends her or defends the corporation, and not anybody who's opposed to her, but, you know, three or four major scholars. Let them look and see if she warrants a suspension or warrants maybe taking away one of her honorific professorships or the ultimate sanction, the end of tenure. It's very hard to take tenure away.
Very hard to take tenure away. What does that mean exactly? Well, in the education society, a tenured professor is a college-level instructor who has earned, quote, tenure. That's a system that guarantees then that that professor can have the job until they retire. It keeps professors from losing jobs because they have disagreements with college administrators and protects their right to express scholarly opinions. That is all good. But it's like many things that are good, it can also be turned around and used as a weapon. If you give a teacher or professor, and it's not just at college level, if you give them tenure, you basically have promoted them and guaranteed them a job after a probationary period. When they're first there, they're not tenured. They could be fired at will, for cause, whatever. They could fight it. But if they have tenure, that's going to be a little bit more difficult. And Alan Dershowitz knows that. And so does Claudine Gay. I've got tenure. You want to take me out of the position of being Harvard president? Okay, I'll go back to being a professor. I'll go back to writing all the articles and books I've written. Oh, wait a minute. She hasn't written any books, come to think of it. No books, a handful of columns. Maybe she can do something for comic books. Maybe it'd be more acceptable there. This is what happens when you set all this in motion. It's got a good reason for it, but then it gets abused, and pretty soon it's used against everyone else. Coming up, Tucker Carlson raising some questions about our economy. A crack. Is it possibly going to become a major quake? Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
It's been a very busy year for Wellington Environmental. Tom and his staff have traveled all over making sure that minor issues don't become major disasters. Then there are the times Wellington is called in for emergencies, but nothing Wellington hasn't seen before. They have certified inspectors, chemists, scientists, environmental planners, and that's just some of their expertise. That is why the St. Louis Business Journal gave Wellington such a high ranking. So what will 2024 bring? No one knows, but if you take time to visit the Wellington Environmental Facebook, you're going to see things that might explain health issues at your home or business affecting you, your family, clients. Wellington Environmental Facebook. Tom Wellington and the entire staff wish you a blessed 2024. Your world cleaner, better, safer. So, as always, be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for us covering the local and global.
People, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local? Really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9/94.1 and NewsTalkSTL.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Car and Driver magazine says the 2024 Toyota Land Cruiser is cool and affordable. 2024 Toyotas are showing up every day ready for immediate delivery at Ackerman. In fact, Toyota has awarded Ackerman more vehicles than all competitors. Check it out yourself at Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44, or online, AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota will get you the best deal. Ackerman Toyota, for life.
This is News Talk STL.
I'm chasing tail lights, straight as a crow flies, hunting justice down a country road. I've got a shotgun, it's riding shotgun, and we're both fixing to unload. Son, I know what you've done, there's only one way to outrun me. You better pray.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
About 3 weeks ago, Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, announced that it was, quote, premature to conclude with confidence that we have achieved a sufficiently restrictive stance or to speculate on when policy might ease. That's Fed speak, and in case you're not familiar with it, that means we plan to keep interest rates high. Okay. Then last week, 2 weeks later, with no warning at all, Jay Powell seemed to pivot dramatically and say almost the opposite. Actually, he said cutting interest rates is something that, quote, begins to come into view and is clearly a topic of discussion out in the world and also a discussion for us at our meeting today. In other words, we are lowering rates. So many people who are paying attention concluded that this was political. Joe Biden is losing the race and the Fed is trying to save him.
That would be a good possibility. That's Tucker Carlson on his channel raising the issue about the Fed says everything's good. We don't need to do anything. But the Biden poll numbers keep going bad, bad, bad. Bidenomics is falling apart. So suddenly, Jerome Powell, the Fed Reserve, says maybe we will need to check on those rates again. Listen, if you're out there looking to buy or sell a home, I know it's confusing for you. Do we do it now? Do we wait? If we wait, is it going to be better for us or is it going to be worse for us? And if it's worse for us, do we have to play the waiting game again? When we had rates as low as they had been, and you could put money into a CD, and if you got a 1% return on your money, you were pretty damn lucky. I mean, and mortgage rates, my God, they were low, 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 right? But it's shifting again, which means for home sellers, it could be a great market for them because they can get that price they wanted for the house to begin with. But if the rates keep going up, well, folks that might want to buy the house say, I can afford the house at the previous rate, but I can't afford it if it keeps going up. And let me give you a little secret. It is going to go up at some point. I don't have the crystal ball to say when or by how much. And I will also say, it could go down. Well, Larry, you're great. You're a great economist. Well, of course. I'm as good as the rest of them. I'm as good as Jerome Powell, according to what you were listening from Tucker Carlson. Things are just hunky-dory. And then maybe we need to reconsider. And Tucker Carlson, with that one question, says a lot about what we're dealing with right now. And that is, are they making changes on a political basis, which is not the way to do it? But look at all the headlines that are surfacing now. I'm looking at, and I'm just looking at surface headlines. I'm not going to bother getting into the stories. Considering the source, I kind of know where it's going. An opinion piece in the New York Times. Is the American economy on the mend? I'll just ask you that. Do you think it's on the mend? So, you know, you have no problems whatsoever with what you're paying for at the grocery or for gas. Now, if you're looking at inflation numbers, keep in mind, generally they take out two core components. Let me see. Okay, they're going to take out if you're buying cake and if you're buying some ice cream. We take those out. No, that's not the what they take out. They do take out groceries, which would include cake and that. What if you're buying a dress or a pair of shoes? No, that stays in. What if you're buying gasoline or you're buying fuel for your heater this winter? No, that's also taken out. So they're taking out the two most volatile and the most immediate essentials you have, food and fuel. And when they take those out, things look better. So I can understand this opinion piece beginning, is the American economy on the mend? That's New York Times. And then I'm looking at a piece from NPR. Supported by your tax dollars, by the way. They didn't take a cut in their pay at NPR. Maybe the staff did, but not NPR. It reads, the U.S. economy performed better than expected in 2023. A 2024 preview. Again, I'm not going to bother getting... I'll do it just because I can hear somebody say, you're not giving me the whole story. Let me take a look at the NPR story that says we're doing better than expected for 2023. Performing better. Here's their 2024 preview. According to, as of January 1, so this could already be bad and old news, it says, according to the host of this program, the U.S. economy did better than expected in 2023. So what's ahead in the new year? Will the economy continue to bubble like freshly popped champagne, or will we suffer a hangover from stubborn inflation and high interest rates? I could have written that, and I don't have to know anything about the economy. He continues, we're only a few hours into the new year. Again, I told you this is January 1, but one of our NPR hosts has been talking with forecasters about what they see on the horizon. Hey, Scott, what do they see? Hey, good to be with you. Happy New Year, blah, 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 blah. So let's start with the caveat that most of the predictions made a year ago at this time turned out to be wrong. That's what the host pointed out. And he said, so take this with a grain of salt. The reporter is saying this. He said, in general, economic forecasters expect some relative calm in the next 12 months. The economy is expected to grow a little bit more slowly. Unemployment expected to tick up a little bit from its very low level, but not much. And both inflation and interest rates are expected to moderate this coming year. The Federal Reserve signaling is probably done raising rates and will likely start cutting rates in 2024. Would that be because we're getting closer to a November presidential election? That's the question Tucker Carlson was raising, wasn't it? And he said, what if they're changing this, trying to prop up Joe Biden? And then Tucker throws another wrench into the works.
What if it's not just Joe Biden they're trying to save, but the U.S. economy? What if the fundamentals are so weak underneath that the Fed is desperately scrambling, groping in the dark to figure out what to do? You have to think that's possible. The Fed is supposed to be stable. That's why they speak like 19th century jurists, to convey stability. But if they're changing their mind on the biggest question that they address in 2 weeks, one direction, another direction, that suggests chaos, and that's bad.
Chaos is bad, whichever way the wind's blowing. The Washington Post has its take on this. And this is a from the Washington Post, Heather Long, editorial writer, in her opinion piece. There's a reason the U.S. economy soared and others were mediocre. She said there's only one appropriate word to describe the U.S. economy in 2023. Thinking of what word that could be. She says, miracle. Many experts said a recession was inevitable. Well, actually, we were in a recession. We had two periods of the gross domestic product back to back. We're down. That is a recession. But looky here. They rewrote the dictionary. They have a new word for recession, so it was not a recession. We just hit $3 trillion. $3 trillion. No, I'm kidding. More than $3 trillion in our debt. I'll give it to you in a minute. But first of all, I want you to hear from Tucker's guest he had on the program, Jeffrey Gundlach, who is with Double Line Capital.
Inflation went up much faster than they expected back a couple of years ago, and they were tardy in raising interest rates. They should have raised them much sooner. So inflation actually on the CPI got to over 9% on the high, which is sort of Jimmy Carter-esque.
Yeah.
And so they had to go into radical interest rate increases. But one thing that is lurking beneath the surface, and I think this is the primary variable, is there is an enormous amount of debt that the Treasury has to refinance over the next 3 years. There's $34 trillion of national debt, which is shockingly high. And it was facilitated by the fact that the Fed kept interest rates at zero for such a long time.
Yeah.
When interest rates are at zero, you can borrow an infinite amount because you have no interest expense. But all of a sudden, interest rates are up by 5.375% or 5.5%. And now we have $17 trillion of Treasury debt that's maturing in the next 3 years.
And that's not going to be good. Our debt right now is just under $34 trillion. You know who owns 74% of that current debt? The public. You own it. Are you happy with having that kind of debt on your back? Well, it was $33 trillion. Just another trillion more. Why not? Get the printing machines ready. Do like the third world countries, banana republics do. Just print more money. And what does this administration say it needs all the time, more and more, especially in resolving the border crisis? We need more money. If we had a third of what we've sent to Ukraine, it would help. Not knocking Ukraine, I'm just saying, look where the money has been going. Coming up, I want you to hear a piece written by Victor Davis Hanson about the real insurrectionaries. You're going to be interested in this. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Ackerman Toyota has the 2024 models. You're going to be impressed. Check them out in person at Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. In fact, you've got to see the 2024 Toyota Sequoia. Very impressive. This is the time to buy and get top dollar for your vehicle. Looking for pre-owned? Ackerman Toyota can also help you. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota for life.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perished in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
One of the five most traumatic experiences in life is moving. I can assure you that McGuire Moving can help ease that pressure. Moving into a new home or a new business, locally, internationally, McGuire is rated number one. More than 80 years of experience. Free estimate, call McGuire, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Run, run, run with the railroad when their backs are turned. Run, run, run with the railroad when their backs are turned.
Run, run, run with the railroad.
Get out of their sight.
When the engine turns, then you gotta move on, and you
gotta move on at night.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So we're talking about the economy, and before we leave that subject, let me share this with you. This is according to a survey from the Associated Press. Immigration will be the most important political issue for Americans in 2024, except for the current war with nuclear-armed Russia. Well, we don't actually have a war with Russia. Ukraine does, and we're involved in it to the extent of what we're sending. But this December 2023 survey conducted by the Associated Press shows 35% cite immigration and the border wall as their top concern. Immigration and the border wall. That's an increase from 27% last year. And in fact, immigration lost the top slot to foreign policy because only 22% of Democrats describe it as a top issue. The issue of foreign policy scored higher at 38%, just above the immigration score of 35%, mainly because this largely nonpartisan issue is important to both Republicans and Democrats. And again, back to the numbers we were talking about earlier, Joe Biden's migration, the immigration issue, beat inflation and economy as top issues. And for Republicans, immigration is a top issue for 55% of them, well ahead of anything else. Right now, Biden is still holding hostage the funding for the Ukraine war with Russia, because he wants congressional funding for more migration during 2024. So far, that hasn't worked. The GOP is holding hands tightly. Good. Locking arms. They're not going to budge. No more money until we get money to actually deal with immigration, not just processing through faster. In the meantime, the Department of Justice now asking the Supreme Court to make a ruling on the barbed wire that the Texas governor put in place, and also arresting illegals when they come into his state, saying, that's our job, but you're not doing your J-O-B. $300,000 crossing our southern, quote, border just in the month of December. You're free to roam about the country. There is an issue out of in dealing with Hamas in Israel that's probably going to escalate. There was an explosion killing anywhere from 20 to 70. The numbers have been moving around. I think the latest is 100-plus killed, 140 wounded, some critical. They were all packed on a road leading to a cemetery where they were going to have the tomb of General Soleimani. And the explosions rocked the area 13 minutes apart. Terrorists often use multiple explosions to target the initial victims and then those who come in to help save them. So they're claiming that these were terrorism against those honoring the Iranian leader that got killed. Others are saying, no, it's probably just a gas cylinder explosion. Yeah, but that little bit of time apart, I will have to go with the belief that it was terrorist action. No one's taking claim for it. Could be Israel. But we're not seeing anybody taking claim for it. I mentioned to you earlier, I want to share a piece from you with you from Victor Davis Hanson with the Hoover Institute. Very learned fellow. He put out about, I think, three different pieces here. I'm going to read you just one of them, part two. Who were the real insurrectionaries? Now, if you believe the leftist media, or as I call them, the state-controlled media, MAGA extremists, those are the insurrectionists. Here's where Hanson picks up part two, adding, Hillary Clinton was joined in her efforts to deny the legitimacy of the 2016 election by a large chorus of elected House members and ex-President Jimmy Carter. Do you remember that? They don't want you to remember that, but yeah, she contested the election. Yes, yes, she called Trump that night and said, I lost, you win, you bet. Well, I don't know what else she said beyond that, but basically that was the word. And she would not go out and speak to her gathered group. Sent one of her lackeys to go out and tell them, hey, it's still early in the night, although it's around 12:01 or so in the morning. But we're going to wait till daylight to get better numbers. The numbers were not going to get better. But Victor Davis Hanson points out that Carter in 2019 echoed Hillary Clinton's remarks regarding 2016. And he said, and there's no doubt that the Russians did interfere in that election. And I think the interference, although not yet quantified, if fully investigated, would show that Trump did not actually win the election in 2016. He lost the election. He was put into office because the Russians interfered on his behalf. Jimmy Carter, I'm ashamed of you for making that remark. I've always held you in high regard on your moral stance. Not such a good president, but he is a man of faith and of the Bible. And, of course, now he's lost his year-long love. But here we have, as Victor Hanson and Davis points out, an ex-president election denialist accusing the then-president of being a traitor as well as an election rigger. And he adds, we do not recall any outrage at that time. He's right. I don't remember anybody yelling out, you can't say that. Are you saying he got in because with the help of the Russians? That would be a traitor. Well, of course, they wanted to carry that story forward, and they did. And even he refers in this piece, again, this is Victor Davis Hanson, third-party Green candidate Jill Stein, remember her? During the 2016 Electoral College process, the Green Party candidate Jill Stein, de facto acting as a DNC, Democrat National Committee surrogate, claimed the 2016 ballot count was illegitimate. She therefore sued Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, claiming the voting machines were rigged. That all sounds familiar, but the reaction was entirely different. Victor Davis Hanson says, to my knowledge, the companies involved, like Express Vote XL, did not sue Stein, as Dominion Voting Systems did, for $1 billion against those who claimed that they had rigged the election. Stein's denial arose mostly in reaction to the Clinton campaign that had loudly claimed, quote, experts found that Clinton tallies in those states did not meet her campaign's did not meet her campaign's pre-election expectations. Well, of course not. She thought she was going to win. Every news anchor on the desk that night standing in front of the map of the U.S. was saying, oh, Trump can win this, he can win this, but he can't break through the blue wall. He cannot get through this. He did. They were not expecting that. And, of course, then they had also, he points out, Democrats organizing a media publicity campaign headed by about a dozen Hollywood stars, appearing in nightly TV commercials seeking to flip the electors into faithless electors. In other words, trying to screw with the Electoral College. That sounds like an insurrection, doesn't it? If you're comparing January 6th to an insurrection, which it wasn't. He goes on to say, in other words, they were urging electors, violate your oath. Therefore, do not reflect the uncontested majorities. Instead, they were then begged to vote for Hillary Clinton, even though she lost their state's popular vote, which is how the electors are decided to who they're going to vote for. And all of this arose despite a July 2020 Supreme Court ruling clearly reaffirming the constitutionality of prior state laws that had declared faithless electors illegal. If you're an elector, you've already pledged your vote to either the candidate that's selected by popular vote or however you make it. Normally it's on the popular vote. That's what then goes to the Electoral College. And, of course, Hillary's saying, I won. I had more people than Trump. I should win. That's not the way the Constitution works. It's not a popularity contest. And that is assuming all of the votes she had above Trump were, shall I say, illegal. And many of them may not have been. They may have been duplicates. They may have been dead people. They may have been harvested from a group of nursing home residents who could barely see, much less write. And they might have been illegals voting. And keep this in mind. Here's again something Victor Davis Hanson points out. Just 4 months after the actual inauguration, which, by the way, do you remember how many black representatives of Congress refused to go to Trump's inauguration? Do you remember that? I do. They refused to go. Anyway, just 4 months after the inauguration, Clinton boasted that she was part of the resistance, which is a direct echo to the French armed effort La Résistance against the Nazi occupation. And he adds, I suppose Hillary thought she was one of the heroic Democrat, and Trump, of course, Adolf Hitler. Left-wing fact-checkers bristle when you make such comparisons between the 2016 denialism of the election and 2020 election denialism. Where is it that they are allowed to deny and question and complain about it, but you're not. You're not allowed to do that. If you do, you must be an insurrectionist. Everything I just labeled and laid out for you is an example of, quote, insurrectionist as far as accepting the vote, even to the extent of trying to get the Electoral College voters change your vote. And so here we are with President Biden. Which brings me to a question for you. Where in the world is Waldo? Oh, I meant something. I meant to say, where in the world is President Biden? That's the jet bringing him back. He's back safely in our country. Well, not exactly wasn't the jet bringing him back, but he's returned from a 7-day holiday beach break in St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands. And his face was kind of looking burned and red. Well, you're laying out in the sun all day. You know, he got nothing to worry about. Except, where's the ice cream? Is it going to melt too fast? This comes just 9 months after he had to have surgery to remove a cancerous skin lesion from his chest. It's a common skin cancer. It doesn't tend to spread. All the cancerous tissue removed, no further treatment. But in this case, he's once again out in the sun. Maybe he had great sunscreen on. I don't know. But it was noted that when he came back and got off the plane, the first thing everybody knows is, oh, my God, we've elected an Indian. Oh, no, that's Biden with a red face. Unless he's got some 1/8 of 1,000% of Indian in him. I love the way Breitbart wrote it. The beet red president answered just one question. How was the ice cream? I don't know. I melted before I get it. Well, no, that wasn't the question. They did ask one question. What are you going to do about the border? And his answer, are you ready for this? I'll bet if I asked you, what did he say? I'll bet you could come up with this answer immediately. And yes, you'd be right. His answer was, we got to do something. No kidding. We got to do something. All but the something has a added line to it. We got to do something. They, talking about Congress, got to give me the money. It's all the way, money solves everything. It might do it in the Biden household and with Hunter's help, but it's not going to deal with immigration. But he adds, they got to give the money I need to protect the border. Keep in mind, the money is not going to be used to put more agents on the border to keep people from crossing in. It's going to be to process them through quicker. We had more than 300,000. I think the latest tally actually is 302,000 crossing illegally in December. So here was another vacation time. That makes a third of the past year he's been at some getaway spot. He could be found in Washington, D.C. if he was working or not is another issue, or at one of his Delaware residences, or, of course, Camp David. And then, of course, you got the U.S. Virgin Islands. I mean, why not? If you got the ability to do it, especially on your dime, sure, I'd take it. And he stayed in a retreat owned by a couple of friends who are multi-billionaires. Still no word on if he actually had to pay for it, or if you paid for it, or if it's just a gift that they'll have to declare. But he has returned. That doesn't mean the same as he's back at work. But he is back saying, I need two things. More money, more ice cream, in that order. Or maybe not. Hey, remember our pledge. One nation under God.